Hey, it's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in a half hour, the general manager and executive vice president of baseball ops, J.J. Piccolo, going to join us. The Royals, of course, are on the road. They lost again last night in Seattle. They are now 5.5 games back of the final wild card spot. Cody's worried that his microphone is not working, and it's definitely not working, even though it's on. So at some point, Cody will be hooked up on the show with us.
I am now.
Hey, here we go.
Hello.
You know what happened? Bob's not in. So that microphone was not used this morning.
It was on yesterday.
And it must have somehow, I don't know.
I'm going to blame, you know what? I've been a little harder on Drew.
We're blaming it on Mac, actually. Yeah. Yep, it's Mac's
fault.
It's Mac's
fault. Don't just turn off microphones.
It's Mac's fault.
You know? We're trying to start this show smooth.
Yeah. I was driving in. They must have played a drop of me about 4 times as I was driving in this morning.
Really?
Yeah, Mac was too busy loading up the drops, so he didn't have the microphones hooked up properly.
What was the drop?
The smooth ride drop.
Okay.
It's their favorite these days, I think.
I don't know. There's lots of.
Oh, we've got some.
It's better that we don't play all the drops.
We got to build up our arsenal of drops of the morning show, so we can fire back a little bit. We got to build up some Dusty, Mac, and Fesco drops if we can as well. But you guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. 913-586-7965. Video stream going to be up and running here as well. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here.
Such a smooth ride.
96.5 The Fan. It's from a video I did when I was driving the Mustang Mach-E.
What is that from?
It wasn't even on air, so they pulled it from a social media clip that we had.
It's always funny whenever you have to explain something. It's just hilarious. It makes that much funnier. Yeah.
I think what hurts is that most of the ones for me in which I say what sound like inappropriate things, I wasn't trying. Like, I don't go out of my way in attempt to say those things.
Mm-hmm.
They just get said because you talk for 4 hours and sometimes you don't think about the way you're saying something. That's all. I hope you don't.
Can you really squeeze that thing in there? Yeah, stuff like that. When that happens, there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk some Royals
out of
baseball.
Context, that sounds bad.
Yes.
Although I was worried I said one really bad yesterday, and apparently it was not as bad as the text I was making.
Every once in a while we get some texts, people think we said something, and then Drew goes back and listens like, no, you didn't say what they said you said.
It was close, but it wasn't exactly what
they exactly. That's what matters. Because close doesn't make it sound as bad. The way they thought I said it definitely would have been.
That's right.
Anyway, Royals baseball.
Yeah, let's talk about this because right now, obviously, they're now 5.5 back. Okay, they're 5.5 back of a final wild card spot. And it is trending more and more as this is going to be a clear sell approach. And when I say sell again, it can still be about building for the future. But if, in fact, that's where this settles over the next 30 days, because we are in the month of July. The calendar is here. We are in the trade deadline month of the Major League Baseball season. The All-Star break is just a couple of weeks away as well. Is there somebody outside of Seth Lugo, so a position player, that you actually think you'd be willing to move to help build this team up for the future? Because it's very easy to sit here and say, yeah, they should sell. All right, well, who's giving you something back in return? Seth Lugo is clearly going to give you the most back in return if, in fact, you sell Seth Lugo, who has an opt-out, as we know, at the end of this season. You could trade a Michael Lorenzen type, but what are you really getting back? You know, you go through the rest of the roster. Positionally, you would have to go into a name like, I'm just throwing names out, Mikel or Vinny or Freddie Fermin or these other guys. And even Freddie Fermin, what are you really getting? I think he's more valuable to you than he is what you get back in return, frankly.
It depends. People are always looking for backup catchers, and you have Carter Jensen and Blake Mitchell in your system, so a little bit easier to let go, but I understand the point. And look, some of these are not exciting in the sense that you're getting a haul back, because I've also seen people mention not Freddie Fermin, but Salvador Perez.
Yeah, not going to get much back anymore for him.
No, not going to get the world back for him either, or Jonathan Indy, or anything else in between. So really, that is the question. I know every single Royals fan right now, pretty much, all of them are willing to trade, I think, Lugo, and Lorenzen, and Cruz, and all these other bullpen guys that they have questions about, or this stuff, or that. And they're willing to maybe see where that goes or see where that takes them and have those conversations. My question is, how close do you think they are? And do you think trading a position player at this point would bring back the player that you do it? I'll be honest. There's not a single outfielder that's even worthy of this conversation, because I don't know who's calling on Lofton or Rafe. They've had enough outfield problems, and I don't think anyone's being like, I hope one day to get Drew Waters on
the
roster.
That's the thing. How many tradable players do they really have?
I think it is just Vinny, India, Garcia, Salvador Perez, and Freddie Fermin. If we're saying position players alone, I think it is only those five players that you could even have a conversation with another team in which they would pick up the phone. I'll just be honest. Right away, number one, I would not trade Vinny. Not because I like Vinny Pasquantino. I do. But because this team has struggled so much offensively. He is their most professional hitter, and I'm not letting the most professional hitter on the roster go. If Jack Caglione had come up and hit 600 and he was the next coming of Barry Bonds, we could kick it around. But because they need professional hitters in the lineup, pass. Just immediately pass. The guys I would genuinely entertain are Jonathan India and Michael Garcia. Guys who I think other teams would be incredibly interested in because of their versatility and the ability to, the seasons that they're having, I still make them interesting players. And because they still have good value now and some control now. And those are the guys I would seriously entertain.
Yeah, look, you should entertain any of these names. Other than everybody but Bobby Witt Jr. essentially should be in a conversation. But here's the thing. We can mention some of these names in terms of position players that you'd be willing to sell. But also, the idea is you're hoping to get something back that can actually make you better in 2026 and beyond.
That's the problem.
And so, you know, the issue you would have to look at for Michael Garcia, do you believe what he has been this year, maybe not necessarily a 300 hitter for the rest of his career, okay, but like what's the regression next year, if there is any? Is he back to what he was last season, or is he just regresses 10% and that's what he's going to be for the next three or four years? He's 25 years old, has tons of control. He can play multiple spots. He's extremely valuable to you, and we all know, like, in the organization, they really like the guy. So when it comes to Miguel Garcia, he can give you a ton back, though. But in their evaluations, do they believe what we've seen this year is something that he can be? And this was a turning point, I should say, of his entire career. Otherwise, that would be the name I'd be most intrigued actually to move, because I believe you could get some pieces back that actually help you with multiple years of control. He already has multiple years of control. So it's going to have to be multiple pieces that help me. It's not just one piece that helps me in 26, 27, 28. It's got to be multiple pieces. Can you package a Michael Garcia with somebody else? That's about it. I'm with you on Vinny, and it has to do with the RBI production for him throughout his career. The only hesitation with him would be, hey, do you think he's going to continue to have injury problems in his career? And if you think that's going to be an issue, that's the only way you would even convince me at all to have a conversation about moving on from him. Freddie, for me, I just think he's more valuable to you, that just as is, and what flexibility he gives you than he is what you would actually get back in return.
The only thing I mentioned, and there's probably some truth to that, the only reason I bring him up in this conversation is I've been told by front office members before that people are always looking for catching. That's why Martin Maldonado has been traded 57 times in his Major League Baseball
career. You can
trade
anybody if you're willing to accept some. And you can. That's the issue. Is not like, will somebody take Freddie Fermin? Of course.
I guess part of this is just the mix of Fermin would be the guy that you take the risk on in the 19-year-old. He does not help you for 2026. I do not think in the return you'd get. The 2026 players are probably coming from the pitching staff anyway, or you got to go higher on the depth chart. Now, look, I think the text line
I saw that
from the 913 says, why is Bobby Witt off limits? And I'll be honest, I don't feel like I don't feel like that really requires an answer. I mean, for fairly obvious reasons, he's one of the three best players in the sport.
Just because he's 25, finished second MVP last year. He's under team control through 2030. Yeah, that might be why. Yeah.
Anyway. Those reasons and just so many, 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 many more outside of that I would probably do that. And I understand, like somebody said, Vinny only hits singles. Does he still lead this team in homers? Because I think he does.
Wow. That's I get your point, but I don't know if this is the year you want to be citing the power numbers for anybody on this team. But yes, I hear you.
He does lead the team in home runs, by the way. He has more than Bobby Witt Jr. He has 12.
Yeah. Point proven as well on that one.
Look, I'm not here to tell you that it's like some end of the road, but that means he's on pace for 20. 20 is not just hitting singles. He leads the team in RBI. He leads the team in home runs. He leads, I think he's pretty low on the, he needs more doubles. I'll give you that. He's two. Bobby Wood Jr. leads baseball in doubles. Michael Garcia is second on the team in doubles, and Salvi is third. So he needs more doubles than anything else.
But
so,
generally speaking, truly, nobody but Bobby Wood Jr. is off limits. I will listen to trades on anybody else on the entire roster and in the organization.
At that point. But, you know, so like I had the game on for a little bit last night. I did not finish it when Arozarena. Is that who?
Yeah, Arozarena had two home runs last night.
When Arozarena hit the second home run, I was out. Like, I didn't want to be out.
But 5-1 at that point?
Yeah. When he hit the second home run and it was the sixth inning and the bases were loaded and nobody was out, I'm like, okay. Let's see if he can escape like he did the last inning. Fingers crossed. And Arozarena put that ball to center field. I'm like, oh, man. And as correctly pointed out by the text line, the Royals are 15-30 since mid-May. And you're just like, this is a team that I have been, and I think we've all been patiently waiting, to hope that they were going to just, like, sort out their problems, figure out, because, like, last night, I know that they gave up a home run and all those other problems, but again, the problem was not that they gave up six runs, it's that they once again scored two. One. Like, and that, you know, like, you can't win, I don't care how good your pitching is, you just can't win baseball games in which you can't hit, which is why the position player argument for me is, like, kind of a tough one. Because if you were to move on from one of these position players, be it Michael or Vinny or whoever else that people want to bring up in this conversation, Salvi, whoever, if you are to move on from one of those, how are you going to replace that? And that's where I think at least it's an interesting conversation. I think Vernon said it on the morning show yesterday, which is, you know, like he knows he puts blame on the players more than anyone else. We all do. Then before he even gets to management, before the manager, he said, some of this is on the front office, as in not just JJ, the guy who'll join us in 20 minutes, but John Sherman and these other guys to fix this problem. And the truth is, because of where the Royals organization and current system is, and the players you and I both know, Gold, are coming up through that system, the only way to fix this offense for the year 2026 is via a pitcher trade who brings you a ready-made outfielder tomorrow for 2026, or money. And this is where, like, the John Sherman part of the conversation comes in. I'm not trying to call John Sherman cheap. I think overall he's actually done a good job spending. He's going to have to spend more. To solve the offensive woes for this team, to get him back into playoff contention, he's going to have to spend. So, like, and I don't really mean that means trade for Mike Trout and pay his contract. I just mean, somewhere at this point, don't you think the money train's going to have to come in to solve this issue?
Well, look at what they have on the roster and what it would take even to retain some of these players. I mean, Salvador Perez has a club option, I should say, for next season. They have to make a decision on that. Is it $13 or $16 million? I have to go back and look at the dollar amount for that. So that, just to retain Salvador Perez, that's what you're talking about for next season. If you wanted to try to bring Seth Lugo back, which, by the way, you could trade him and still try to bring him back. But if you try to bring him back, that, to retain him, is going to cost you more than what it costs this year to have him on your roster. So that, just to keep two players from next year, is already more money than what you were spending this year. That's just two guys. And then you still have giant holes in left field and right field. We'll see long term, obviously, with Jack Caglione, where he ultimately plays throughout his career. For the time being, it's right field in a combination of multiple
and if
positions.
If he can come around, well, then you do
right field
solve part
is solved
issues.
There, right? But there are a lot of holes moving into 2026 if you're not willing to make any moves this month, right? If you want to make it easier on yourself in 2026 and beyond, there are a couple moves to make. But I also think it's important to make sure, you know, you point out, though, when we talk about selling, as I said to start the show about 8 minutes ago, you know, you don't have a ton of pieces to move that are going to bring you back a lot. It's basically Seth Lugo. I mean, it really is. There's Seth Lugo, maybe Michael Garcia, if you wanted to explore that. That's about it. And again, Bobby Wood Jr. is off limits. So, you know, as far as, you know, Carlos Estevez, he's got a couple years of control left, or another year of control. You would like to have that guy as your closer next season. You know, Lucas Hursek has way too many years of control for me to move on from him. So there's just not a ton of pieces. Michael Lorenzen, sure, trade him, but what are you getting back for Michael Lorenzen? I'm not saying they shouldn't trade him, but if you think you're getting a ton back for him, Chris Bubich would be another player. You know, if we go away from the position players,
taking a big risk.
If you're not willing to give him an extension, well, then you should explore what would that bring back. If the two guys that could bring you back the most clearly are Lugo and Bubich.
I will say, you can sometimes get good things back for relievers, valuable players back for relievers, but it's not consistent. You know, for instance, the Royals got Cole Reagans for Aroldis Chapman. I don't think you're always going to get that kind of return for it. But there are ready-made players close to the big leagues you can get for relievers occasionally. But yeah, they're in kind of a tough spot.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we will talk to the general manager of the Royals, J.J. Pecola. We'll ask him, has anything changed in the last week or so in terms of their conversations, recalculating, if you will, how you approach the next few weeks closer to the trade deadline now that the team is 5.5 back, 7 under .500. We'll also get his perspective on Jack Caglione, what they've seen from him. And frankly, has there been any conversations about sending him back down to the minors? You and I think that would be a mistake to do, but have they even had those conversations? Those are some of the things we're going to get into with JJ Piccolo here in 15 minutes.
Meanwhile, you had mentioned, what, I don't know, maybe we had the conversation 2 months ago, and we're like, right around draft time. I'm not going to worry about, I think the exact sentence on this show was, I'm not going to worry about the Trey Smith contract until the 1st of July, till the calendar turns.
Well, here we go.
And we are, you know, 2 weeks away from the deadline. Well, congratulations. Today is July 1st. It's the first of the month. So we have to have the conversation around Trey Smith. What's most intriguing about this right now is there has been, in my opinion, very little to no buzz about it. For a contract that is close and for a team that I've seen allow one of these deadlines to pass in Chris Jones, then have to wait an entire year to figure it out, I can't say with certainty that they're for sure going to get this deal done with Trey Smith. And you and I both still agree. My biggest problem is that then you should have kept Joe Tooney and given him an extension if you didn't think you could get this deal done. It was imperative that that deal made sense to get this contract done.
That's the only way trading Joe Tooney made sense. If you are getting a long-term deal done with Trey Smith. And I still think they do. But yeah, now we're inside 2 weeks or so. The franchise, the deadline to extend a player that has signed the franchise tag. And by the way, Trey Smith signed that bad boy quick. He locked in that, what was it, 24 point whatever million dollars. That's the starting point. You know, on a per year basis, that's where you got to start. You're not getting him at 20 million for, no, he's got a tag right now that's going to make him already the highest paid guard in NFL history. The question is, sounds like, is 4 years versus 5 years, what each side wants there. And I'm sure some language in the contract and how they would divvy up the money. But we know, like, the per year average, essentially, there's really not much debate to be had or negotiation to be had on that. I still think it gets done. I think it's very clear Trey Smith wants to be in Kansas City. We've talked about his impact in the community and just overall kind of person he is. He's a guy you want around. He's
teammates
obviously a hell of a football player. I truly think both sides want to get this thing done. That's why I think it gets done. When you have two sides that truly want to get it done, it'll get done. But yes, they have to get it done. They have put themselves in a corner where it is egg on your face. If he goes into the season just playing on a tag at that dollar amount and you don't have a guarantee that he's your long-term answer at right guard, it's a massive mistake. So that is honestly why I think they get it done, because they don't make that move without that.
My biggest problem, obviously, is related to the same thing that happens with Chris Jones or the things I'm critical of on other teams with players like Jamar Chase or Trey Hendrickson or some of the others. Let's just say you don't get the deal done at the deadline and it goes the way the Chris Jones deal is, and he still gets here long term. A year from now, they find a way to work out the deal with Trey Smith. Well, then how much more per year is it costing you? And no flexibility in the cap number this year, which means in-season additions become very difficult. It doesn't mean you can't lower the cap hit for next year or any of the other things, but like, you're just putting yourself behind the eight ball a little bit, or maybe you have to add the dummy years that other teams are doing in the void department or all these other things. I assumed the willingness to trade Joe Tooney and start a rookie or a second-year player, I think, in Kingsley Suamataia, or a veteran guard in Mike Caliendo, a pretty far drop-off, I would think, from Joe Tooney, was all around your willingness to give Trey Smith as much money as possible. Is this when I should expect the warming up of the conversations to start?
Yeah, deadline spur action.
2 weeks.
Yeah, deadline spur action. After the 4th of July holiday is my guess you'll start to hear some more stuff. After this week, we get past the holiday, you get into inside of, you know, 10 days or so, that's when I think you'll start to maybe see a couple reports from guys like Nate Taylor, et cetera. Hey, where things are at. Right now it's been very quiet. You know, neither side, there's no agent is leaking anything yet or anything like that. But yeah, it's probably one of those where, if we're being honest, of predicting if it happens, it's probably inside of like 4 or 5 days from the deadline. So July 10th to July 15th or whatever is probably the time frame we're really talking about.
I mean, I was looking at the numbers and it's just like, there's no numbers now that are going to surprise me. So I guess I can't really be truly offended by whatever the contract ends up being. I assume it will be for at least the $23 million a year he's going to earn on the franchise tag. So 4 for $100, 5 for $125, like somewhere near-ish that ballpark. And you and I agree, because of the move that they made, there's no number that's going to seem too high now. One thing I think I've been trying to adjust to is, because $25 million a year for a guard sounds crazy, but I think we're all going to have to adjust to a little bit in some of these contract things. Goes back to where the CBA and the collective bargaining and all this other stuff, and where the cap numbers have been going in the NFL, which is $25 million what it used to be in the NFL, because you got wide receivers making $40 million. Sure. You know, you got quarterbacks making 80 mil, right? I mean, it's the number now relative to it is somewhat there. And I just think you made your bed. I hope you're right about Trey Smith because I know Joe Tooney's the best left guard in football. I think Trey Smith can be one of, and maybe is in that fringe area of, one of the five best right guards, certainly in the sport, maybe the three best right guards in the sport.
I'm fine with their decision as long as they get the deal done. You know what I mean? Yeah. They chose youth. They chose the younger option. Joe Tooney still
probably... usually a pretty good idea.
Joe Tooney probably still has 1 to 2 years of being the all-pro left guard left.
Yeah,
probably. Right? And he's had an unbelievable career. He's going to do great things, I'm sure, in Chicago this year to protect Caleb Williams. And their offensive line was a disaster last year in year one protecting Caleb. They had to revamp their O-line. They did. It wasn't just Joe Tooney. They did a bunch of other things with the O-line. And obviously, they have a brand new head coach. Trey Smith, long-term to me, is still the correct decision. But that long-term is the key part of that, meaning you have to have a long-term deal in place. And look, they haven't missed the deadline yet, so they got 2 weeks. I don't think any of it, once it wasn't done right after the draft, it was pretty evident nothing was going to happen in the month of June. Everybody's just going to kind of pause. Yeah. He was at mandatory mini camps because he signed the franchise tag.
He wasn't all like practicing, right? He was just hanging out.
I believe maybe he was practicing. Okay. I could be wrong on that. I think he was practicing.
I wouldn't have cared either way.
Yeah, I think he was, which was a good sign. People wondered if he would show up. Remember, that was the conversation, and he was there. I believe he was going through drills, so... we can double check on that. But anyway, I think Trey Smith ultimately gets a deal done. Well, I don't know who caves on the years and what they settle on there. I have no idea. Prediction, we know the dollar amount for the most part. I don't know if it's going to be a 5-year deal or a 4-year deal. But
I think
that's
the Chiefs
debate.
Want a longer deal. Is that what the rumor is?
They want to give him some more flexibility.
He wants to get paid again when he's 30. Part of me would just be like, it's the NFL, man. I'll take the money. How can I ever be guaranteed another cent in the NFL?
Remember, Trey Smith's story, I think it's important, too, a little bit. This is why he probably signed the franchise tag immediately and locked in the $24 million.
How he got in the league,
six-round pick. This is a guy, like, by NFL standards, before somebody texts in and says, that's a lot of money. By NFL,
I wish I made $700,000 a year.
By NFL standards, he hasn't made any money, okay? Yeah. By NFL standards, he hasn't. You know, in year one, he made $790,000. Okay, last year was the most he had made as an NFL player, 3.3. Oh, of course, we all would have taken that. But by NFL standards, for being one of the top guards, he wasn't making any money. And so he's got his first crack at making big-time money. Yeah.
Small NFL deal, according to Adam Schefter. The Dolphins are trading a conditional 2026 sixth-rounder to the New York Giants for a seventh-rounder for a player I forgot was out of the league, Darren Waller. So they traded Jonnu Smith.
I thought. Darren Waller said he retired.
Not only is he in the league.
What?
He was on a roster and eligible to be traded, according to Adam Schefter. Waller is coming out of retirement after agreeing to a 1-year deal with the Dolphins worth up to $5 million per Drew Rosenhaus and Robert Bailey.
So interesting.
So he came out of retirement, and then the Giants traded him to Miami.
So this is interesting. So Jonnu Smith, the Dolphins tight end, gets traded to Pittsburgh. Clearly, the Dolphins were already having conversations with the representation of Darren Waller to find out, hey, you still want to play some football? How about Miami? It's nice and warm down here, Darren. And clearly that was the Giants are like, we'll trade him for nothing because we thought this dude was gone. We thought we had nothing. So we'll take something. Actually, a smart move by the Miami Dolphins. I'm just surprised Darren Waller is back because he retired last summer. He didn't play last season.
Yeah.
His personal life
kind of blew up a little bit. Saw a couple of songs come out.
He's obviously had some stuff throughout his life and everything. But that's okay. That is a surprise. So, it makes the Jonnu Smith trade actually somewhat of a smart move on the Dolphins' part.
Well, they're just doing a pick swap, a conditional sixth for a swap of a seventh, and we'll take the guy who wasn't even playing for your team anyway off your hands, and I guess just pray Darren Waller's got any juice left. There was a very brief, like an 18 to 24
months. 32 years old.
I know. I'm just saying there was a very brief period of time where Darren Waller looked like one of the five best tight ends in the sport, but that was
He's 32.
Forever ago.
His final year in New York. What do you have? 52 catches, 552, and a touchdown.
That's a league average tight end.
I mean, 32-year-old tight end. We're talking about the greatest tight end of all time in Travis Kelce being like 34. People saying he's washed. 32-year-old sat out a year who was never at that level. And people like, I mean, I don't know what the Dolphins are expecting. They're basically trading him for nothing. They're getting him for nothing. So I don't know the other. Did you go through and you said who's the other tight end in Miami? Or did they draft one?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure the rest of the Dolphins roster.
Interesting. Darren Waller. Okay.
But Darren Waller's on it now.
Was not expecting to say that name today on the show. You know, sometimes that's what's fun about this job, Cody. You just don't know where the show's going to take you sometimes.
I forgot.
I didn't think about Darren Waller's name was ever going to be like uttered on this show maybe again. And here we are.
I think that's probably fair. I didn't realize how many quarterbacks. They have Quinn Ewers and Zach Wilson in Miami.
Yeah. Oh, well, in fairness, they do have a quarterback that unfortunately can't stay healthy. and has very serious problems when he gets, you know, a concussion. So
their tight end room is Pharaoh Brown, who they brought in from Seattle, and Julian Hill.
I don't know.
Tanner Connor.
These are nobodies.
And well, correct. I know.
These are dudes off the street.
No offense to them, because so they are
Darren Waller.
Players,
it is. Okay.
Darren Waller is the guy, basically.
Right. Two of the guys don't even have profile photos on ESPN. I'm looking at. They're just like silhouettes.
Oh. That's always a good sign.
They haven't even bothered to get the actual photo.
That's
of them
usually
yet.
A really good sign about, you know, your depth at that position.
Their roster is really not that great.
No, they're taking a step back. I think they know they're taking a step back based on the moves they've made this offseason.
All right, up next, maybe we'll talk more about that trade stuff a little bit later on the show. But up next, let's talk some Royals baseball with the general manager of the Royals, J.J. Piccolo. We'll ask him, have they recalculated at all how they approach the next couple of weeks with the team now sitting 5.5 out of a playoff spot? That's coming up here on Cody and Gold. All right, just getting started here on a Tuesday. Real quick, some news in the NBA just broke. The Milwaukee Bucks are waiving Damian Lillard. They're going to stretch out the remaining $113 million on his contract in order to go out and acquire Miles Turner. Remember, Lillard
crazy
tore his Achilles tendon during the postseason. So after 2 years in Milwaukee, he was the big addition to go with Giannis. He's out. And in a couple days, he could go and sign a veteran minimum deal if he wanted to just go ring chase and get himself a ring somewhere. But that's a huge deal as the Bucks trying to keep Giannis happy. They didn't want to have Giannis sitting there without Damian Lillard, without another star player to go next to him. So they go and get Miles Turner for him. So big news in the NBA. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. But let's pivot to the Royals again. We welcome in the general manager and executive vice president of baseball operations, J.J. Piccolo. He joins us every few weeks here on 96.5 The Fan. J.J., appreciate the time as always. We talked to you a couple weeks ago about where this organization was at and kind of looking ahead a little bit, still ways out from the trade deadline. Now, as you guys sit 5.5 back of that final wild card spot and 7 under .500, has the last week or so caused you guys to recalculate how you're approaching the next few weeks?
No, not really. I mean, I think we're in a position where we're still competing to get into a wild card spot, and that's exciting. I think we have the personnel right now that we should be optimistic that we can still compete. We play a lot of those teams that are, you know, in the mix with us in the coming weeks and months. So, you know, the hard part is, you know, you got a month of July until you get to the end of the trading deadline, and then you have another 60 games in August and September. And when we look at our roster and guys that we expect to have back at some point this season, we think our roster is just going to get better.
I guess, you know, like obviously some of those guys, including Cole Reagans, but like, do you, like if it's Michael Massey or some of these others, like are there, what's the hope around, I guess, the offense at the moment as far as getting those guys back? Because right now it seems like the hope is around just hoping guys hit better, JJ, versus like the options you have available to you in AAA.
Yeah, well, I think some of the guys that we have in the current lineup that are healthy and playing, I think their track record, you know, speaks for itself, and we can expect some progression there with the guys that we have. We also have some young guys that are going through this for the first time, whether it's Caglione or John Rave. You know, they're going through some typical early career struggles that we see with a lot of good hitters in the game. Guys that became very good hitters and very good major league players. So there's reason to think within the group that we have, it's, you know, it's typically 13 on any given night, that we can get better with the guys that we have. And it's just trying to stay positive. You know, we examine our processes all the time, and, you know, just talking to our players on a very regular basis, you know, they're looking at themselves in the mirror and say, you know, we got to go out and do it because our processes are right. And they're the same processes that we've had success in the past. You know, and then when you start looking at a Michael Massey coming back, you know, it's never good when a player gets hurt. But I think in this case, it's a good situation that there are some things that he's now going to be able to work on while in the minor leagues to get his swing back to where he wants it to be.
Look, it's no secret. You know, the month of June didn't go the way you guys would have wanted. Fans obviously didn't like what happened in the month of June. Is it tough to, I guess, when you look at where the organization sits, to still have the morale high, to still have confidence, to still believe that this, and keep everybody believing that this can still happen this year?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a team that made an incredible jump from 23 to 24 and gained a lot of confidence and did things that people didn't believe that we could do. So I don't know why we would think any differently right now. You know, it's an emotional roller coaster that we can be on. And when we're winning games, people are excited, and is this the game to turn things around, and et cetera. And then when you lose three or four in a row, is this the end of the season? You know, my job and the front office job and the coach's job is to eliminate that noise and just worry about today. You know, we can't control what's happened in the past. You know, the first 80-some games, they're done. You know, what we can do is focus on today and how we win a game tonight and build off of that and keep this thing moving forward. And I believe in our coaches. I believe in our players. And, you know, we just have to stay positive and know that you're one good run away from being back square in the middle of this thing. And that's where our optimism lies. I think that's the way we should think as an organization. You know, our fans have been turning out at the ballpark to watch our team play. So clearly, you know, they are excited to come to the field, and that excites us and motivates us. And it's our job now to just try to get this thing moving in the right direction. But it starts, you know, one brick at a time, you know, and tonight's that brick that's got to get laid. And then you just keep building off of that.
You'd mentioned Jack Caglione has been a rocky start for him so far in his early big league career. I guess specifically before we talk about like options and like what makes sense for him as far as lineup goes, what specifically are you guys seeing in his approach? I don't know if it's just the ground out seem a little higher or those things. What are you guys seeing right now that he needs to work on?
Well, to be very candid about it, his minor league peripherals, the batted ball profile, very, very similar to what he's doing in the major leagues. The chase rates were a tick up in the minor leagues. He's always been very aggressive. He's got incredible reach, so he can get to those balls away. I think what is happening right now is exactly what the major leagues is about. Pitchers can repeat pitches. They can go in pitch after pitch. They can go up pitch after pitch. And now it's up to the player to learn from those experiences and from those at-bats and how can I be a little tighter with my zone. And that's something we discussed well before, publicly and privately, before Cags got called up, that was going to be the challenge. We just got to keep him positive as well and keep going. That's why we keep running him out there. You know, and we're very optimistic that there's going to be a stretch of the bats where you're going to see that he starts to figure this thing out. But again, it's very typical. But when you look at I'm not talking about numbers, homers, RBI. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about his process and how hard he hits the ball, his ground ball rates. They are all very similar to what we've seen in his minor league career.
Alex and I both think it'd be a mistake, but there's no like internal conversation about like, hey, if this continues for another 30 days, maybe we get him back in AAA and work through those things. Right now, this is a work through at the big league level thing, right?
Yeah, we don't discuss that on a regular basis. You know what it is? It's night to night. You know, we saw some signs on the last road trip where he did have some, I'll say, results that we wanted in the homers he hit in Texas. And then he went to San Diego and he hit the ball really well, but was a bit unlucky. A couple line drive outs, a couple of balls that were, you know, really squared up where he's played perfectly. Hit a couple balls foul that were homers. They were just foul. So they're foul balls, you know, they don't count, but they're the things that we saw and say, okay, he's starting maybe to come through this. And then the pitchers kept repeating pitches. So you got to give this thing some time. You know, it's very, very natural. I can name several players over the, you know, the Royals history that I've been here that have gone through some similar things. And we wouldn't have brought him up if we didn't believe that he could work through these tough times that you know he's going to go through at some point. So we're going to be very patient and give him the opportunity he needs.
It feels like it's magnified as well, not only because of course, all the hype around and excitement around him being a prospect, but when you have the offense overall performing the way it has this season and since he's been called up as well, do you feel like that's also maybe led to even more of like the spotlight on some of the slow struggles that we've seen so far for Cags?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, going back to, you know, prior to us bringing him up, you know, and I believe we said this very publicly, you know, the ideal situation is the offense is clicking and you just slide him in. But we also said at the same time that we were going to do what was right for Jack Caglione as a player. And if we felt like he was not being challenged anymore in the minor leagues, then we would bring him up. You know, those two things didn't coincide. So it does get magnified because I think regardless of I'll say experience in this. You know that a player come up for the first time shouldn't be expected to carry the offense. And I think with all the optimism about him and the excitement about him, that was the expectation of our fan base. Internally, that's not how we were thinking about it. We just wanted him to be another key piece in a lineup that we were trying to stretch out and have a little bit more balance, where we had some what we call action players at the top end of our lineup and the back end of our lineup. And then you put Vinny, Salvi, and Cags together in the middle, and that's where you're going to get your slug. That's what we were envisioning for this, and still believe that that's what's going to happen.
Thinking of fans and where they're at and the range of emotions, obviously, that happened, being a fan of a baseball team that obviously has had very high expectations for the season, and to this point, of course, not on pace to meet those. Some look at the hitting staff, some look at a hitting coach in particular, and say, hey, what's going on there? Should there be a change? What would your response be to those fans?
Yeah, we know what's going on internally. Again, I mentioned this, earlier in this interview. We talk to players all the time. What do you need? What are you thinking? There is a very positive feeling about our processes from a hitting perspective. The relationships are really, really deep. You're talking about guys from the first day that they signed a professional contract with the Royals. They've pretty much known one person or two people that are on our major league staff. And that's why they believe in those coaches, and that's why we believe in those coaches. What we need to do is just keep asking the questions, keep probing, trying to find nuggets that will help players get out of it. Our players, again, are very, very accountable. They understand how this thing works, and there's a strong belief in our coaches, whether it be our managers, our hitting coaches, our pitching coaches. There is a strong belief that these are the right people, and we just have to be supportive and work through these things. We feel for the players. They're the ones that are going out and standing in the batter's box. And, if it's ever comes a point where they feel like we've lost faith in them, then we failed as coaches. But right now they know that we believe in them as players. And that's the messaging that's going to continue to happen alongside of all the work and the preparation that goes into getting ready for each and every game on every night.
I wanted to ask about a couple of players who have been on the IL at least for a little bit of time. So Alec Marsh, Kyle Wright, Hunter Harvey, are any of those guys closer to maybe joining the team or helping the team here in the future?
Yeah, I think, of those three, I think Hunter Harvey seems to have the most clear path. Kyle Wright had a little setback the other day. He's got a little oblique strain that's going to put him down for about 2 weeks and start building him back up again. He was on a pretty good path when you look at, pitch totals, and the command was getting better and the pitch shapes were getting better. But from a timetable standpoint, I think that we're probably looking at Hunter Harvey, getting back sooner rather than later. Alec Marsh, maybe deeper into August, before we can really, truly count on him. I think at this point, probably going to be more so in a relief role. If we'd like to get something out of him this year, his health is going to be number one. We got to make sure he's healthy. We're not going to push him through things because he's somebody that we're going to count on in the future years. Of those three, I think that, Hunter is probably on target to get back sooner.
When you look at just one other question about the hitting, JJ, since we've got you, the overall team power, I know we've talked about the offensive numbers. Do you guys have a sense of like where that's gone? You guys weren't like a prodigious power team last year. You ranked 20th in baseball and homers, but this year dead last. Where do you guys think the power numbers are going? I know Kauffman plays a part a little, but this has got to be a little bit lower than you guys were thinking.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we don't build our teams around power for a lot of different reasons, but when you think about why does a player or a team not hit homers? A lot of it comes down to just pitch selection. I mean, if you're swinging at bad pitches, it's very difficult to get off a good swing. If you're swinging at good pitches, you got a better chance to get off a good swing. And now it comes down to timing and the sequence of your swing. And if you're doing that on a good pitch, then you have a chance to hit drive a ball, doubles, homer, whatever. That's as simple as it is. And I think the numbers will show you that our chase rates are higher this year than last year. And I think that leads to the lack of power, even from a team that wasn't counting on homers last year. You're going to see a regression, and you see a regression in doubles. You see a regression in slug. You see a regression in on-base percentage. And that's where the focus has been. You know, we on a regular daily basis, go through the at-bats. You know, we get information every night, not only through video, but here are your at-bats. You know, where did you win this at-bat? Where did you lose this at-bat? And probably 95% of it comes down to getting a good pitch to hit. So you start doing that more consistently, the homers will tick up. And that's as simple as it gets. So, you know, and that's what we're working on. You know, not necessarily to hit homers, but to be more selective as a hitter. That's what we're trying to do.
JJ Piccolo, Royal General Manager. He joins us every few weeks here on 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate the time.
No problem, guys. Thank you.
There you go. That's JJ Piccolo, Executive Vice President of Baseball Ops, Royals General Manager, with us on Cody and Gold. Obviously, a couple different things there. I think, you know, clearly at this point in time now, I don't expect a general manager ever to 3 weeks out of the trade deadline say, yeah, you know what, we're throwing in the towel and we're trading everybody. I don't ever
they sound
expect,
pretty confident still it, that they're going to continue trying to win.
But yes, right now. It sounds like, no, they're still going for this. Now, I do think we always have to recognize, as I said, I don't think a general manager would ever come on the radio and say, yeah, we're actually shopping this guy and this guy and this guy. And
come get him, fellas.
I mean, that's never going to be said. But yeah, I mean, they still think that they are in this, at least publicly, and that they are going to roll with this thing, and they still believe things are going to turn around. And it's July 1st. There is still half the baseball season to go, but I think it's one thing in May to say, all right, Salvador Perez is off to a slow start or whatever, and it'll turn through because we know what he's been as a pro, or pick
it's
another
hard,
player.
July 1st, but the offense should be better.
But in July, you know what I mean? In July, to think suddenly it's going to turn around for not just one player, because we know it's not just a one player problem, for three or four different guys. I just don't see that.
So I understand the concept that is, and I've told you this before, this is the same lineup as last year. So fundamentally, This should be a team that scores more runs, hits more homers, hits more doubles. But sometimes multiple players, some players together, there are lost years in baseball all the time. I'm sure the Baltimore Orioles are telling themselves the same thing. Aren't these the same?
Right.
Now, not the pitching, but
they also fired their manager.
But if I were their offense, I'd say, aren't these the same guys we hit with last year? Why aren't we hitting? Sometimes full years go that way. And now that it's July 1st, they have all of April, all of May, all of June. I am having a hard time doing the, like, tomorrow's the day that the offense will just get back to normal, because they've had 3 months to stabilize from the level of offense they were last year. I will say he did, like, not just because of what he said, like you said, I wouldn't expect JJ Piccolo to come on the show and just be like, we're trading them all.
Right.
Come, you know, like.
Yeah, that's not how any organization's going to operate. Yeah,
No.
Totally get that.
But the tenor in which he speaks is that of a team who still genuinely believes this team can compete for a wild card spot, and that 5.5 games is not insurmountable, especially considering the fact that two of the teams above you are divisional teams, which means you still play them a lot. It's getting harder to believe every day. Obviously.
Yeah, look, and you have to be optimistic if you're in that role and you're around the team and things like that. I totally understand. I would say, you know, this Mariners series, a team that is above you in the wild card standings, beat you last night. They went from 4.5 down to 5.5 down. That's why yesterday I said they got to take like 3 or 4 of the Mariners. Otherwise, I think it's over. And here they are. They're now 5.5 back. They got 3 more games against the Mariners. If they get swept by the Mariners, or they only take 1 of 4 from the Mariners, Cody, they're sitting, I'm bad at math, they're sitting 8.5, 9.5 back, just like that from a playoff spot. I mean, at that point,
The problem is one of the teams you're chasing, actively chasing, because they're in the 6th wild card spot, you're playing them right now.
Right.
So like, you can't be like twiddling your thumbs now. And I like every year there's a team you can point out. Last year was the Detroit Tigers, and there's a million others. Every year there is about one team that goes from the position the Royals are in and gets hot and rides that out. And because, again, the Royals are elite at one thing, that thing being pitching. They still have one of the best ERAs in baseball, one of the best starting pitching ERAs in baseball. Obviously, it'll be even better, ideally, when Cole Reagans is able to rejoin this team, I don't know, a month from now. I could have asked about him too, I guess. But whenever Cole Rankins is able to rejoin the team and is healthy, you'd think even more movement. But that hasn't even set him back. But, every day we've had to come on this show for about a month straight and say pretty much the same thing. Like, will you hit tonight? Please? I'm begging. And maybe it is as simple as just if Salvi gets hot at the same time Jack Caglione figures out how to hit at the big league level and the other guys are just normal, Bobby Wood Jr. and Vinny and some of these other guys who've been the more consistent guys in the lineup. Like, Bobby Wood Jr., I was looking up the runners in scoring position. Vinny's still way below where he was last year, but is quite a bit better since the beginning of May or mid-May. Bobby Jr. is hitting .290 with runners in scoring position. He's doing his job. Mikel Garcia is still having a nice year. He had a bit of a slow stretch, but he's still having a nice year, hitting well. It's the 4, 5, 6 category that is just at no point shown. Even Jonathan India had like a month where you're like, all right, you're doing pretty much what we were asking you to do.
Not once this year have they had three of their key players all hitting at the same time.
No.
Or two, even no. Two. Like, it just has not come together.
And they've had multiple opportunities the last couple of weeks where you're like, yep. If Jack just, and I get it. But like, so if they're looking at that, they're trying to tell themselves, it'll happen eventually, but it's July 1st.
Here's the problem.
I can't keep doing that. Yeah, I understand why they can, but yeah. I can't keep doing that.
The problem is, too, if you are saying, hey, we still think we're competitive, we're still in this thing, and it's truly like the aggressive mindset, there's not other teams making trades to go and say, hey, we're going to boost it now because we still think, let's get it before we're completely out of it kind of thing. And so just in the next 2 weeks, hoping that a few guys turn it around, if they don't, I still think the decision will be made for them. You know, again, publicly is one thing.
They get
8.5, 9, 10.5 games out. Cody, I think by Friday. Yeah. I mean, by Friday, if they're 8.5 or 9 back, well, then things heat up. And no organization, you know, has a press conference to declare we're officially selling. Okay, that's not how this works.
It doesn't show up. What a wild. You have to declare it publicly.
That does not exist. Yeah. So whenever they decide, quote unquote, they are selling or whatever, they're not making an announcement. The announcement will be the moves. Okay, it'll be trading Seth Lugo and or other pieces. That'll be the declaration, if you will, of selling. No team just comes out and says we are now officially with you. We're selling or we are officially buying. You do it with your actions, and I think their actions are going to show. While they believe they're competitive, their actions are going to show that the reality of the situation in the next couple of weeks, if in fact they're 8 to 10 games back, which could happen by the end of this week.
Yeah. I mean, I think JJ said it in there at one point, which is you got to build them brick by brick. You better build the brick tonight. Like, it's got to kind of start now because, you just don't have any wiggle room left.
All right. Up next, we'll talk about a big move in the NBA. We'll also get to what the mayor Q had to say with CDOT yesterday about his confidence in the Royals and Chiefs staying in Missouri.